I'm Lindsay.
I'm Austin.
And I'm Joe from PopX Cast,
a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network.
Just like the show you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of each individual host.
Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And get ready, because geekiness begins in
3, 2, 1.
Hello, and I'm Annika Wills, and I played Polly in Doctor Who in 1966, and you are listening to Gallifrey Public Radio.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten.
Did you just say womp womp?
And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I like it with the helmet on.
And Keir Hansen.
And that's why, to this day, I can't eat cotton candy.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 218 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we learn just how creepy an opaque helmet on a spacesuit can really be. It's the Vashta Narada. No, wait, no.
Who turned out the lights?
That's a 10th Doctor story. So it's the impossible astronaut. No. That was Smith in the 11th. Okay. Well, we're seeing a pattern here for certain. It's about as clear as 2 plus 2 equals 5, really. My name is Keir, and joining me in the GPR studios this evening is Haley Malley. Haley, what's up?
Well, this week we pushed through the 7-episode story, The Ambassadors of Death.
A little emphasis on 7.
The Third Doctor and Liz Shaw try to come to UNIT's aid in dealing with a spacecraft malfunction. A team of generally uncooperative scientists, only to find that there are some new occupants within the Mars 7 probe, and they're probably not welcome at dinner.
Nah, things get kind of shocky. This is a bit of a point of contention for a lot of classic Whovians who are particular to the Pertwee era. We've had some that actually chimed in on this, and said that this is kind of it's a 50-50 split based on what you want to take from it and what you want to burn and forget from it. But Haley, coming at this for the first time, and knowing what we've just gotten from things like Spearhead and some of our other Pertwee stories, how did this one sit with you?
Well, as with most 7-part stories, it's about 3 parts too long.
Yeah, that seems to be the consensus. it is one that, although, and this is actually a comment that that one of our listeners, Don, had chimed in on, and he was saying how, yes, it does definitely feel its length, as do a lot of these series 7 stories. But it seems to move at a better pace. It doesn't have quite those long dragged out scenes or repeated scenes. It just seems like there were things in there that didn't need to be.
The story is unnecessarily convoluted.
Yeah.
Like, there's about too many twists on who's the bad guy.
Yeah.
In this story. And, if you trim it down to 4 parts or so, I think you get a more cohesive, straightforward story than you do when you've got to stretch it out and add some more twists and turns to make a 7-part story.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, David Whittaker wrote a lot of the Doctor Who serials. Power of the Daleks, Evil of the Daleks. He even wrote stage plays. For some of the Whovians, they were going to do Curse of the Daleks in 65. They were going to do it on stage. So, yeah, I mean, he had a lot of time behind the pen. But I think when it came to this particular story, which I appreciate the sort of the timeliness of the concerns over nuclear energy, radiation exposure, that's really obviously at the heart of this whole thing. I even appreciate some of the, even when you get past some of the hokey science, treating radiation with cortisone, things like that. But there's the issues of some of the stereotypical characters. And you mentioned a lot of villains in here. There's a lot of baddies that you're trying to keep track of. Who's working for who? Who's at the top of the chain? Was it really Sir Fancy Pants there, who ends up biting it in the middle of episode 4 and so forth. Well, he's apparently not the head of the thing. The military ends up getting sucked into this. So you've got Carrington and Regan and all of these cronies and things. That gets a little difficult to follow, but some of them kind of, they fit their typical molds. You know, he's ticking all the boxes here from a writer's perspective. You got Quinlan, who's kind of like your typical kind of government ladder jockey. He's just there to do whatever he needs to raise the ranks, you know, and make it appear as if he's doing it for God and country. Carrington is your stereotypical military reactionist. I don't understand this thing. Bomb it.
You know? We could use that to send a nuke.
Exactly. Yes, we could go rescue them, but can you put a bomb on it? And then Regan, who's actually a pretty good, just general kind of baddie, but I don't know how he ever gets anything accomplished with this team of flunkies that are just some of the stupidest thugs on the planet. You've got like Flynn, the German, and whatnot, that just, if they're not sent out there to just thump somebody over the head, they're really not good on the deep conversation. So yeah,
they went to henchman school and that's all they learned.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a level 2 henchman at best. But I do like some of the underpinnings for this. You know, you've got an alien race that really, honestly, and the title says it all, and this is actually something I think that Heather wrote into us through Facebook and was noting on this, just the idea of having them as ambassadors. Such an excellent choice of words, saying, you know, these weren't probes, these weren't anything that were coming out there that could be possibly misconstrued. I mean, just in the very nature of the term, we are here as an ambassadorship from one species to another, and you kidnap ambassadors and you've got a conflict. So that's...
The humans are kind of dicks.
Go figure.
Like, we're just this backwater country. Yeah, you can't even send ambassadors there to talk to these morons. They throw them in cages and...
Just lock them up and then start programming them with little push buttons. Make them, look, I can make it stop. I can make it back up. I can make them turn left. This is the greatest RC car I've ever had. But it's really not a bad story. I think it's just not executed as cleanly as it could be. I don't really have a problem with any of the characters individually. Liz is awesome through this thing. She gets some action sequences where she's getting thrown over a dam and all this stuff. And she has to work with that poor little, who's that little scientist? Lennox, the poor little guy who keeps trying to help her out, but he's so beaten by this whole thing that he's, you know, I can help you, but it's really not going to help because we're all doomed. So here's the key. Oh, look, he got caught and brought back. I kind of told you so. You know, poor little guy. But I think out of all the supporting characters, I kind of really dig Cornish, the guy who runs the lab site. You know, he's just kind of this crux between being the bureaucracy. You know, I have this institution that I need to run, and the scientific pursuits that are at the core of it. So yes, he has to be a suit, but at the same time, he's a scientist and understands really early on that the doctor is not a threat. If anything, he's going to be able to help him towards this. And he ends up, you know, being a major contributing factor to sort of doing an end around Carrington on a lot of these things. I don't know. We know that we have very limited exposure to Liz. I mean, this is her season, you know. Mm-hmm. And from your perspective, looking at it through the lens of knowing your stronger New Who companions, how is she stacking up?
I'm liking her so far. She hasn't done anything to overtly annoy me, which is saying something for a companion coming from this era. Mm. I'm hopeful for her.
She's had no damsel in distress moments. You know, she's never really in distress. Anytime that she's in a threatening situation, like, she's trying to get herself out.
She gets kidnapped because that's the job of the companion. But, you know, she can rescue herself. She's fine.
Yep. And she gets to drive Bessie. So, hey, there you go. Bessie gets so much use through this story. I'm loving the fact you get down towards, I think it was like either the 6th or the 7th episode, when you got all these unit soldiers that are like, you know, they've got to get to the location. Bessie is the only form of transportation available to them. So there's like five or six of these guys all piled into this little antique, just trundling down the road there. And I'm thinking, you know, you guys, you got six soldiers in an antique car, but I know some folks who got 13 people into a Toyota Yaris. So we're one-upping you there. And I think the only thing I think
probably had less horsepower than the Yaris.
That's true. Well, yeah, maybe. Maybe.
And I don't think we actually moved the Yaris once we put the 12 people in it.
No. I don't recall. That night was a little blurry. Anyway.
Yeah, parts of that night are very fuzzy. But anyways.
But the biggest thing I have in my notes here, because it was, you talk about just being able to use their model simulations and things like that, because some of their location shots, yes, as they're running around on the scaffolding and things, and they're steam escaping, and we're messing with the M3 mixture and so forth. And I think they were either at it wasn't a cement factory. I think they actually filmed this at like a milk processing plant or something like that. So I'm like, you guys are launching rockets from this place? I don't see anything that resembles any sort of...
Yeah, it's got like tubes and tanks and valves. It's sciencey stuff. It's fine.
There's a meter that goes back and forth like this. Well, you know they must have had it all figured out because they've been, you know, it's the early 70s. They've already been sending all these Mars probes up. And apparently, according to that whole sequence where they send the doctor out there, it only takes three people to send a rocket to Mars. So NASA is apparently grossly overfunded. And there's no need for all these people because we can just get Cornish and two of his assistants and job done.
Well, wasn't there, I'm fuzzily remembering other conversations, isn't the stuff that takes place on Earth possibly like 10 years into the future of the time that it was written?
Yes, well, because there's the whole issue that we deal with a little later about the unit conspiracy and where Sarah Jane fits into it and so forth. Okay. So yeah, we're a little thrown off our time here, but nonetheless, even 10 years,
they're projecting that, yeah, in 10 years, three guys, that'll be fine.
Well, that's all right, because Elon Musk is hoping the same. Did you notice... And they're so played down in this. Like the actual aliens that we end up seeing on the monitor at the time, you know, both when the doctor's out there trying to get the astronauts back and then when they're communicating back with ground control there. That one alien representative that you see through that's always on the really jankiest monitor possible so you can't get a good look at him, kind of look like a half-baked ice warrior throughout. Same helmet, same Lego man hands.
Listen, they've only got so much money for props.
Yeah. I think all they did, they just you know, a gray paint over the scales for a minute and stick some hoses off the back because I need a radioactive alien for a minute.
Yeah, it'd be
but
fine.
I think my favorite part of the whole thing was when they really started playing around with a lot of green screen use. So they had the doctor stepping out of the recovery capsule on board the alien ship, and he steps out about 5 feet off the ground and floats down to the ground. You just see the camera panning across the green screen to bring him down to ground level. I love early effects. It's just magical. But it is a fun story for what it's worth. And as long as I get to write down in my notes, making the capsules kiss. That's that's all I wanted. Yes. Just repeated kissing capsules. Every time it happened on screen, I just underlined it again on my notes.
I just thought the word docking and then giggled.
Yeah, the doctor ship was coming at it from like a 90-degree angle. I'm like, no, you're going to have to fix that because that's not going to make for good television if the thing just thumps into the side of your other capsule. That's no good. I need head-to-head. But it's going to set us up to get into what we'll be getting to in a couple of weeks, which will be some of our listeners this has been noted as one of their favorites because this the story Inferno gets you in a lot of fun. We're starting to deal with the parallel universe Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. This is the first time we really start digging around with this. So you get the clean-shaven Brig with the eye patch. Oh, you're going to love this. When you get Bizarro World Brig, I've been waiting for this one. So, I will also note that this story, that Ambassadors gave us an opportunity to have some more screen time for Benton, Sergeant Benton, played by John Levine. And he gets more and more prominent, but both he and Yates as sort of the seconds in command to the brig, Captain Yates and Sergeant Benton, respectively, get more and more screen time, become more and more of an integral part of the unit-based stories. And I'm so glad they do, because these guys are a ton of fun. They just round out that whole unit family, and it's okay. The brig and the boys. So make notes, stick a pin in that one. But yeah, so that is the Ambassadors of Death, and we will be coming back in a couple of weeks to deal with the 54th story. But it is another 7-parter. So Haley, just plan your time accordingly for Inferno. But that's that. Have something a little different to do this week. We've gone through all the interviews we've been sharing over the last couple of months, really. And you know, they'll emerge again as we attend some more upcoming cons. We've got Regen and Who coming up in March and things like that, so we'll be sure to collect some new material for those. But just for fun, we decided we were gonna try a round of something that I'll just call This Week in Whovian History. So you know, as we're recording for this week, we are within the third calendar week of January, by this year of our Lord 2017. So that's the 22nd through the 28th. Had a lot of things.
I feel like you should have a really cool like video bump to set this up.
Ooh, like in the year 2000 or something. Yeah, I'll work on that.
Okay.
Settle for just a sound effect.
Do something creative.
Yeah. Hey, Kira, insert something creative here in the edit. So. Let's see what we've got here. Let me take the first one here. So line items here. A lot of stories had their premiere within this week, going back historically. So Seeds of Death, which have already enjoyed, hit the airs for the first time in 1969. Carnival of Monsters, which we have not gotten to yet, but I know, Haley, you're going to love this one because this involves giant Godzilla-like dinosaurs.
It's always a good way to go.
Yep, that'll be coming around. First aired in 1973 during this week. One of my personal favorite Tom Baker stories, The Ark in Space with Sarah Jane, 1975. A lot of people are familiar with this one, even if they don't know a lot of classic Who, because it was one of the few stories that was, for a number of years, featured on Netflix. So at least they got a chance to, you know, to get that kind of exposure. And the Peter Davison Fifth Doctor story, Frontios. First aired this week in 1984, so a lot of good exposures there. Not a lot of stuff, obviously, being the January time slot and the way schedules for New Who have structured. We didn't really have anything, you know, turning out. This was usually the hiatus period after the Christmas specials, so no luck there. We'll see what happens in seasons to come. What about some birthdays?
Well, this one guy, some people who are fans of the show might have heard of, Sir John Hurt, had a birthday this week. He played a little character, the War Doctor.
Oh, I was going to say Sherlock Holmes. Yeah, but okay. Yeah. Yes. Very happy birthday to Sir John. Tommy Knight. For those of you who are familiar with the Sarah Jane adventures, he played the adopted son of Sarah Jane, Luke Smith, for a number of years. And I think he's still a pretty young kid. I think he's only like 24 now. So, yeah, he was actually playing his proper age on the program.
Weird.
Here's a bit of a classic Who New Who cross. Christopher Ryan, who played Kiv, if for those of you who are familiar with Mind Warp, but also saw him as a Centauran, General Stahl, in the Centauran Stratagem. So there's a jump from old Who or classic Who to New Who. And then what's our last one?
Frank Skinner, who played Perkins in Mummy on the Orient Express.
Still waiting for an explanation on who programmed Gus, but maybe we'll get that later. To sort of counter that, along with our birthdays, this week also marked the passing of Neil Wilson back in 1975, whom we were just recently enjoying as Sam Seeley in Spearhead from Space. So our favorite grumpy country bumpkin, Sam. And just as far as things that happened within the classic Who stories, back in 1981, this week, Romana and K-9 separated and bid their fond farewells to the Doctor in the fourth part of the Warrior's Gate story. So that was the last time we had seen that Mark version of K-9. And kind of that Mark version of Romana, too, for that matter. She went through a few. But there you go. but for the news. Yes. I think I might have to credit Simon Pegg for being the first one to really make this little tidbit of trivia go viral over this past weekend. As of January 22nd of 2017, that marked the 40th anniversary of Tom Baker uttering a very, very particular line about rather topical alternative facts. What exactly was the quote, Harry?
Well, he said the very powerful and the very stupid have one thing in common. They don't alter their views to fit the facts. They alter the facts to fit their views. And he said that in part four of The Face of Evil.
You can interpret that any way you will. Maybe it's the very powerful. Maybe it's the other one. It's entirely up to you. But
we didn't say it. The doctor did.
That's true. Don't kill the messenger. But speaking of the doctor and making some political statements, we do know that also just over this past weekend, we saw Mr. Capaldi in the public eye joining with rather more than a million other people in one of the many marches going on around the world for women's rights and empowerment. So got a lot of photo opportunities there among the goers in the UK, held up a couple of signs that he appreciated as he saw them around. And it was just fantastic to see him and his family out there joining the masses. So we'll be sure to, if you haven't by any chance seen some of these photos, we'll make sure that we share some of the tweets that went around that shared PCAP among them. Speaking of sightings, little thing, but figured I'd put it in here because we're big on toys. The London Toy Fair upcoming, their 2017 con is going to be, has already announced that they are going to be getting the next round of the Doctor Who toy line as sanctioned by BBC. So you'll get some updated Tennant figures, I believe. You'll get a scale. I forget what scale. I think it goes along with the 5 1/4-inch figurines or something like that of the 10th Doctor's TARDIS interior. So you get the steampunky interior. It wasn't really steampunky, though, was it? That was more 8th. How would you describe Tennant's interior if it's not steampunk?
I don't know. It's kind of like steampunk without all the nozzles.
Okay. Maybe it's diesel punk. I don't know. I'm still working on that one. But yeah. And then obviously I think one of the coolest things that I'm looking forward to is the updated 12th Doctor figures have the hoodie, the ratty t-shirt, the hoodie, and the 3/4 coat over it. So you got the dressed down Doctor to go along with your various dressed up velvet jacket Doctors and things like that. So that'll be a fun one. They still haven't done the one with the holy sweater yet. I don't know if they can get quite that look conveyed on a little action figure. Put this one in here because, well, never seems to stop. Joining the throngs of both Hollywood and British talent who have come forth and said, oh, I'd love to do Doctor Who. And if it happens to be a particularly slow news week, everybody picks it up and runs with it. Our own dear Whoopi Goldberg has made it known that since she's been doing less stateside and actually getting more involved in UK projects, she would absolutely love to be on Doctor Who and has actually pestered the production team to what extent I don't really know to be on the show. So
well, and then some people were saying make her be the doctor.
I
know I saw that on some internet comments.
Sure I don't want to discourage anyone, but I'm gonna come real close on discouraging that one.
Just who would have thunk out of all the actresses in Sister Act it would be Whoopi Goldberg that would be the doctor.
Exactly. Right. I can think of at least a couple others right from that cast alone. But I think it could be kind of cool to have her in some sort of, or maybe even as herself role, which they don't really ever do. But somebody, maybe if it's somebody who's just, you know, isn't too much of a stretch, you know, someone that keeps her character true to who she is, you know, she's an American actress in London or something of that sort, and you know, and keep it within that scope. But I don't know, I think it'd be kind of cool.
I could see her playing a role in Doctor Who.
Yeah, yeah, just a walk on. You know, yep, not major. But that's kind of our close for this week. We're at this point where we're bunkering and we're getting prepared for our April approach. We're also slowly going to be trickling our way into con season. The United States is going to be preparing for their exposure to class around that same time. We will be wrapping up class next week based on our Canadian broadcasts with episode 8, the finale, The Lost, where pretty much everything that we've dealt with to date has to get resolved now. Everything.
Yep.
So for those of you who have been waiting and sort of skipping every other episode with us because you want to wait until you get a chance to see class in the United States, just know that this is the last time, because once we get through this, we'll do our classic rewatch the week following, and then we'll be into more shenanigans, probably some games and some listener contributions and some trivia and all that good stuff to do on our every other weeks until April comes to save us all. So, you know, as it does. But yeah, thank you to the listeners who contributed with some feedback on Ambassadors. And we'll expect to hear from you again on Inferno. If our UK and select other European countries, sorry, Germany, you haven't been getting it either. Maybe our Aussies, some of our Aussies can let us know what they think about the wrap-up of class. Now that you've seen it, feel free to chime in on it, and we'll share that with next week's discussion. But until then, this has been episode 218 of Gallifrey Public Radio. And until next week, this is Kier saying, it is all in a day's work. Here at the hey-ho, Silcock, laundry, bakery, whatever name is on the side of this van this time.
And this is Haley saying, I was shocked by the continuity at the beginning of the story when the doctor remembered what happened in the last story.
I don't see.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
So you're playing the role of Jay tonight for inexplicable hardware failures. Would you like to burst into flames anytime soon, or
just... No, I'll just let my computer crash completely.
Okay. Yeah, I don't. You should go get let a number of children play with your computer for a few hours first, and then don't reboot. Whatever's been running, just leave it in the background, and then just go on business as usual.
13-year-old boy, just so much porn.
So much.